Blog Talk Radio.
You tuned in.
First Lady Point of View. First Lady Point of View.
You tuned in.
First Lady Point of View. First Lady Point of View.
Culture, music, news, reviews.
First Lady Point of View.
You tuned in.
First Lady Point of View. It's the First Lady Point of View.
Tapped in, yeah, we always on time. First Lady Felicia K on the line. Wanna know what's poppin'? Tap in for the scoop. On all the hot topics. The latest fashion, new music reviews. The hottest artists in exclusive interviews. You came to the right spot. First Lady on deck, keep it locked.
Keep it locked. Keep it locked. You tuned in.
First Lady Point of View. First Lady Point of View.
You tuned in.
First Lady Point of View. First Lady Point of View.
Culture, music, news, reviews. You tuned in.
First Lady Point of View.
You tuned in.
First Lady Point of View.
It's the First Lady Point of View.
Yes. Happy Saturday, everybody. I want to thank you all for tuning in today. We have a special guest today. I'm going to introduce him shortly, but I want to wish you all well. I hope everybody is doing well and being safe, especially with the COVID-19 still floating around. You guys got to take the proper precautions. You guys, I see that it's a lot of people out here moving like we ain't in a whole pandemic still. I don't know what solution is, but just be safe. It is getting a little bit better. And if you're on the West Coast, make sure you guys be real careful with the climate. The air, our air out here is horrible right now with the fires and the smoke. So just be real careful. And that's the deal with that. I got to wish you all well and send you guys positive energy and all of that good stuff before we get right into the thick of it. I'm real excited about today's guest. He is an author and he goes by the name of Pookie, aka Lawson, and he's the author of a book. So I'm gonna have him tell you about that book. And well, I was gonna tell you the name of the book, but I'm gonna have him do that. So without further ado, here he is from Miami, Florida, Mr. Torrence Pookie Lawson. How are you today?
I'm all right. Good afternoon, everybody.
Yeah. So tell everybody a little bit about the name of your book behind. Go ahead and you tell them.
Yes, my book is called 30 Years Behind Prison Walls, and it's a true story based upon my life growing up in the city of Miami and the struggle and poverty, you know, in the ghetto. So I started the book from when I was young and boarded up all the way to like 2016. You know, it could be purchased on Amazon.com, you know, and I wrote the book like 8 months before I was released from prison.
Okay, and so what made you wait to do it 8 months before you was about to get out of prison? Did you know that your release date was coming, or did you get out unexpectedly a little bit sooner than you expected?
No, they had passed the juvenile law that stated that you can't give a juvenile life in prison no more. So when I came back on appeal to Dade County Jail, I was around a bunch of juveniles, like, you know, younger guys, and I used to talk to them about my past experience in the street. So one of them was like, you know, because that's what they call older dudes, Man, yo, when you be explaining stuff, does it sound like a movie, man? You need to write a book. So, you know, he inspired me, and one day I was just sitting in the cell while I'm down there on appeal waiting to be released, and I started writing, and I just started writing my life story. And when I was released, you know, I published the book and, you know, got it on Amazon.
Ain't that something? That they say you can learn from a baby. Look at where your inspiration came from. That's what's up.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's up. So, what age? You said you were sentenced as a juvenile. Tell everybody what age you were sentenced to life. How old were you when you were actually sentenced to life?
I went to prison when I came. I was sentenced at 16 years old for first-degree murder, three attempted first-degree murders, armed robbery with a firearm and carrying a concealed shotgun. And when I was sentenced, they gave me 5 consecutive life sentences with 25 years mandatory.
Wow, and you got out after 30 years.
After 32 years.
Because you're still young.
Yes, I'm 49.
So, yeah, God was on your side with that. Because you still
Yes, he was.
You've been out for quite some time. You've been out since?
Yeah, 1986.
Okay. Okay, I thought I heard you say something about 2016 in there. So, wow, that's crazy. So you went, you went in 86.
I went in 86 and I was released then in 2016. And
okay,
I would have
right
been
then.
Out
said,
earlier, huh?
I said I had it right then because I said you got out in 2016. So you must have misunderstood.
No.
So I was right.
No, I went to the county jail on appeal in 2016. I supposed to got out in 2016, but while I was there, the old prosecutor and them came with a plan to try to prevent me from being released out of all 6 of my co-defendants. He was like, you know, I don't mind you all cutting, you know, resentencing the other 5 sentences, but don't let Lawton out. So what they did, they conspired on me while I was in the county jail because I was the last one to be released, and they put 2 attempted murders on me while I was in the county jail. So I was the last one to get out. I sat in the county jail 3 years waiting to prove my innocence on those 2 attempted murders that happened in another cell I wasn't even in. So during that time, like I said, my mom was on diabetic, and if they wouldn't have put those charges on me with, you know, stopped me from getting out during the time I supposed to got out, I would have been out like 3 years with my mom. Then after they dropped the charges 3 years later, a day before I was finna be released, my mom passed.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
sorry to
she
hear
died
that.
On a Thursday, and I got out on a Friday.
Oh, man.
Yeah, So I never got a chance to see her. I went to the funeral, though.
Wow. It's a cold system, and it's interesting because you said that you weren't even in the cell of the attempted murder that they tried
assault.
To put on you.
No.
But see, that's interesting because you know that's what it's all about. They try to base it on, like, okay, well, you in here for one thing, so anything similar to that happened, we'll just put it on XYZ. And it's ironic because we still going through that with the system today. We've been going through it. It's just crazy. And then the fact that that's a story in and of itself, like that's a whole spinoff book where the prosecutor is just being a familiar face and knowing you and thinking, this is the one I'm going to target. They always got a chosen one they're going to target. He said he was willing to let the other 5 go, but not him. You know, that's like a whole spinoff book right there. You know, so that's just a bad look. So what about your co-defendants? You said it was 5 co-defendants. Is everybody else out as well now?
Yes, everybody out. Everybody doing good. You know, they stable. They working. You know, they living their life. Everybody out.
That's good. That's good to know. So what about, do you want to talk a little bit about, like, how long were you on trial? Do you want to talk about, like, some of the excerpts from your book? We can do that. We could talk about some things you got in the book, and because after that, I want to talk to you about your life now, but I want to talk about the actual book, what's going on with the book and the content, what people can expect to get out of the book about your experience in your life.
Yes, I was raised by my father and mother in a household, and, you know, my father and mother, you know, like I said, we was out the projects, and you know, my daddy sold drugs. My mama was a registered nurse. He made her quit. He didn't want her working. So, you know, my household was full of hustlers, you know, and me growing up watching my dad. So, you know, I was the black sheep out of all the kids. So I kind of like followed in my father's footsteps, but in a different version. I was caught up in the street, like on robbing, you know, robbing jewelry stores and, you know, stuff like that. So he was in the drug game. So my book basically talk about how I grew up, you know, and all the heavy hitters in Miami, the known areas in Miami, Liberty City, Opa-locka, you know, Alibaba, Brown Sub. You know, I just went there, you know, in all those areas of all the dudes who made a name in the streets there in my book. Then I talk about when I was incarcerated, you know, and how I survived in prison around adults because they never sent me to a juvenile facility among my peers. They sent me around adults as a juvenile. And God was with me because I survived all sin, the raping, the murdering, the stabbing, the suicidal, the officers killing inmates. You know, I experienced a lot of things in prison at such a young age.
Yeah, that's a young age to be locked up with adults. I always question that, like how they try. And I get it. You know, sometimes it's warranted because of the crime, the heinousness of the crime, but I still think that it should be a separation. I think juveniles should be locked up, even if you don't give them whatever the case may be. They should be locked up with juveniles, and when they're of age, then you could put them with adults. The reason why I say that is because, first of all, we all know prison is not designed for rehabilitation, period. Okay.
Yes. And
that's just what it is. They claim that's what it is, but nothing about that is designed for rehabilitation. I have a brother that's doing life right now, as well. So my younger brother. So I already know, you know, what it is with that. He's almost 19 years in now. So on his life without the possibility of parole. But when you go so young like that, I just think it should be a separation because it's already not designed for rehabilitation. And most people, when you put babies in there, you're an exception. You God was on your side, right? That you got out and you're a productive citizen and you're a loved man. But a lot of that comes into play with seeing that a lot of black families is missing, and that's a two-parent household. I don't care what nobody say, whether it's dysfunction, hustling, drug dealing, whatever, a two-parent household, that structure, that matters. That matter
yes,
as to what type of adult you become. Like I said, it could be toxic even, but it still matters. That foundation of men, boys need men in their lives, and girls need women in their lives. You need a mom, you need a dad, and the structure of two parents cohesively work together for the fundamentals of a child, meaning teaching them right from wrong, principles, structure about homework and how to treat others, manners, even if it's hustling. That's a learned skill, right? That's something that will get you over in life. What you choose to make your hustle, that's one thing. I know I got dealers former dealers that was in my family. They principle was when they was out there was don't get caught. Now, some people might say that's stupid to teach a child, but if you teach them not to get caught, that's a part of the hustle, correct? Because I have one uncle that used to say he did his time and he out now and he living a good life, but a righteous life. But I remember he used to always say, if you hustling drugs on the street and you continue to get caught, you're not good at it. You need a new line of work. That's a lesson, right? I look at all things as lessons. Everything is a teachable moment, whether it's good or bad. That's a lesson, meaning he said that if you get caught often, that's not your line of work. Find something else to do. And I agree with that. But with that being said, back to the course, is kids just don't need to be with adults. And you're the exception that you turned out well. So now I'm going to ask you this question. When you were in as a young child, 16 years old with adults, were there a lot of other young kids your age locked up in that particular facility at that time, or were you the exception, which that is a whole nother story if you were just only minor in your where you were at?
No, I was the youngest one. I was the first one that ever came to Martin Correctional Institution at such a young age. You had some guys there like 19, 20, but I was 16, so I was the youngest.
See, that's a whole nother, that's just goosebumps that you really turned out okay. I'm happy for you, my brother. Seriously, I am, because you seem really grounded and level-headed and about your family. So tell me a little bit about the family dynamics. You how many siblings do you have, and what is it? Is it boys, girls, and where do you fall in at?
My mom have four kids, but all together, my daddy have 42 kids.
Oh, it's a lot of y'all. Sound like my granddaddy.
Yeah.
I was born in Jacksonville, but all my family is in Florida and Georgia. So I know how that goes. I think my grandfather, my mom's dad, even though my mom comes from a two-parent household as well. I don't know. Maybe it's a downside.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because it's alleged that my grandfather, my mom, and her, my aunts and uncles, by my grandmother, his wife, she has three boys and three girls. Alleged my grandfather has over 20 kids, but it's at least 12 that we know and claim and affiliated with. So, but we all close though.
Yeah.
So, my aunts and my uncles, we all rock together. All my cousins. I actually love being from one of the biggest, most respected families in California. It's a good thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
It works, you know. So it has its perks.
Yeah.
So, out of your mom's kids, Where do you fall in? Are you the oldest, the youngest, the middle? I know you said you're the black sheep, but does that mean you fall
in
the middle?
Yeah, I'm the second. It's my big brother. My big brother, Dwayne, he's 51. Then it's me. Then it's my little brother. And then my sister. I have one sister from my mom.
Okay. She look like you, too. You post her a lot.
Yeah, that's my baby. That's my little
Yeah, I can tell. She's the only girl, so she's spoiled, too.
Yeah. She the only one ain't been to prison. Everybody been to prison. My mom, my dad, my two brothers, and my sister was the only one, you know, made it through school, you know, never been in no trouble. So she the only one.
That's a blessing. That's good. So as far as with the whole experience of being locked up for so long, were you constantly in the appeals, or did you just started appealing after the law changed, meaning you kind of was like hopeless, thinking, well, I got these consecutive life sentences, it is what it is, and then you started pursuing your appeals once the juvenile law came? Or what was the deal with that? What made you end up getting to the point of where you appealed this last time and it worked for you?
No, what it was, I always was in a position where I appealed my case, and it was like, you know, they always was denying me, but I never gave up, and I never had the concept that I'd never get out, you know, because I always believed in God. I just was there. My body was there, but my mind was always free because I was always in touch with society as far as, you know, people supporting me and know what was going on in society. And then when they brought that law about in 2013, I met a guy that worked on my case, and he helped me get back in court off of that new juvenile law.
Okay. So as far as the juvenile law, tell everybody, give a little bit of education on that. This might be informative to somebody else as far as what is the guidelines to be able to qualify for the juvenile law?
Okay, the juvenile law consists of as you meet the criteria if the judge determined you was rehabilitated. If you show a sign of reform, not getting in no trouble in prison, and they come to the concept that you've been rehabilitated, they'll modify your sentence. They'll remodify your sentence and cut it. But if they come to a conclusion that you still are a risk far as getting in trouble, they could deny you for 2 years. And then they have another motion, a 3.850, and the motion is called, let me think right quick. I'm caught up right now. But it's another motion where if you serve 25 years, they automatic bring you back and review your file to see how you conducted yourself in prison. If they see that you was productive in prison and ain't getting no trouble like that, they'll cut your sentence too. So you had two vehicles, two avenues to really get out. So one or the other could work.
Okay. That's good to know. And I know that that is informative to somebody listening that I help. So another thing I wanted to talk to you about that is in the book is we talked about a little bit about your childhood, and you had five co-defendants. So do you have in the book as to where things went wrong and you ended up getting life, or is that something that you chose not to discuss in the book?
No, the book is very uncut. I wrote everything pertaining to what I went through. One thing about me, I'm not, you know, feeling no type of way of expressing what I experienced in life. So I put everything in the
That's good. People
19,
like that.
And I stay with her now.
That's good. So as far as the breakdown of, were you all tried together, all six of you, or did you have separate trials?
No, I was the only one went to trial by myself. I was the first one to be convicted. And then my cousin and my homeboy, they went to trial together. And then it was two of them, they the one told. So they got little lighter sentences. One got 5 year probation, one got 12 years. And the last one, he was on the run all the way to 1990, turned himself in and got 15 years. But me, my cousin, and my friend that went to trial with my cousin after me, they had received life too.
Wow. Yeah, but you did tell me that all of them ended up getting out, though, right?
Yes, everybody out right now.
That's good to know. So do you have any contact? Oh, wait, are you on parole? No?
No. Up under that juvenile life, they saying that parole wasn't designed for juveniles. That's a harsh punishment. So they didn't put us up on the parole. What they did, when they take your life sentence off, they give you 40 years with 5 years.
See, that's good information. You dropping gems on the listeners right now. These are good things to know. Yeah, I appreciate you for this. This is a very informative interview. This is my first interview of this type, and I've been doing journalism for 10 years, radio broadcasting journalism. I really, really thank you. That's why I keep having to grab my sword, because it's all these questions in my head that I knew I wanted to ask you, and I'm just making sure I don't forget anything, and I want to ask you questions without being offensive as well. So,
You don't have to worry about being offensive. I'm very open minded, so you can ask me anything. Anything you can ask.
Okay, well, I'm gonna just get right to it. Do you feel resentment at all towards the two individuals that told, or do you feel like you needed to be held accountable for whatever your part was in the crime?
Say it again, because you was breaking up.
I said, do you feel resentment at all for the two individuals that told, or do you feel like, you know what, it was a blessing in disguise. I needed to be somewhat held accountable for my part in the crime.
Yes, in a way, you know, like I say, I have seen both of them since I've been released, and that was a hard pill to swallow, that was a demon that I know I had to face, because in prison I used to have ill feelings about when I see them, what I was going to do to them. But, you know, over the years, by God blessing me and releasing me from all that time that I have, so I felt like he forgave me. So if he forgave me, I have to forgive them. So that was kind of hard for me in my life to accept facing them and looking them in their eyes, knowing that they testified on me, took the stand on me, and did that to me, and we supposed to be friends. You know what I'm saying? So I swallowed that. It was a hard pill to swallow, but I swallowed it, and I just moved on and lived my life. I see them from time to time. I speak and keep going.
That's an honorable man right there. Because that's just a hard one. I definitely feel you on that. That's a hard one to swallow. I personally feel like if we are co-defendants, if we are co-D's, it ain't nothing to talk about. You did the same thing. A civilian that witnesses a crime and tells is one thing, right? This is my opinion. But a person that is a part of said crime, if we are co-D's, it's a bad look. Like, you don't tell for something that you are part of. So
exactly.
You're definitely honorable for that. And just, I know that was a hard one to swallow, because I didn't realize that they took the stand,
mm-hmm.
and you had to be able to look you in the face and tell. So
exactly.
And still walk around like nothing happened, I'm sure. But let me tell you, I'm a firm believer, though. They don't get a lot of peace at night. Even all these years later, you can't feel good about yourself. The fact that you see them regularly, it's odd to me that they even still wanted to be in the city. I would have probably moved away. But then again, I would have never been. So you just never know how you will handle a situation that you would never be in, right? It's easier said than done. But I'm happy that you're taking the high road, and what a way to look at it. That's definitely the way to look at it. Like, God forgave me and gave me another chance. So I don't have to forget what they've done, but I will move past it. I don't always necessarily forgive people that wronged me. I'm God's child. I'm not God. So I'm still a work in process, but I do move on from it. And that's the difference. You know, you can move on. You can move on and, be happy, because it ain't going to change the fact that they still what they are at the end of the day.
Yes.
So that's that on that. And so as far as the two gentlemen that testified, did they testify against all four of the other gentlemen, or all four of you, or just you?
No, they testified against everybody.
So it wasn't personal?
No, it wasn't. It was personal, because they were trying to get out.
Yeah. I meant that it wasn't personal.
Always
towards
personal.
You. Yeah, like towards you.
Yeah,
like,
it was personal.
We'll sacrifice. Oh, okay. Yeah. We'll sacrifice Pookie and let him fall on the sword for everybody. But collectively, they told on everybody except themselves. Or did they tell on
each
other too?
No. Yes, they implicated themselves into the incident what occurred. They involved themselves, but by them telling what actually happened, they got a lenient sentence.
Ain't that something? So when you were, how long before the incident and you being actually arrested and convicted, what was there a time frame, or did you guys immediately get picked up?
No, it was 4 months later of the crime. We actually got away and was living our life, and they went to, you know, these dudes, they wearing all the jewelry, which they wasn't supposed to be wearing it. So people in the neighborhood watch went to calling in and anonymously snitching. So they went to one of them, and he confessed it. But when they went to him, they were asking him about another group of guys that was doing robberies And he thinking they talking about our incident, which they was only talking about a robbery, because my incident was a robbery and murder inside of the Miami flea market down here. So they, another group of guys robbed a flea market in Broward County. So he thinking they talking about our robbery, which is, was a murder involved. So they detected them, just let him kept talking. And once he kept talking, they seen that he talking about a different incident. So they called that district police in North Miami and said, do y'all had a homicide and robbery over in North Miami in January? They say, yeah, we're investigating. Well, I have a guy right here. We were asking him about Broward County, Oakland Park flea market. He telling us about North Miami flea market robbery and a homicide. So they say, bring him over here. They took him over there, and he told them the same thing, and they read him his rights and booked him, and he went to snitching from there.
Oh, well, he was already on scene because he was in a whole other county giving it up. So he already knew how that was going to roll out. Dad, go back to what I said. My uncle said, if you ain't built for it, find another line of work, because that was easy.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's heavy. You guys really, it really is like a movie. This goes from a book to a movie. It seems like, it's like when I'm hearing it playing back, like I said, it's so much that I had in my head that I was going to talk to you about, but it's like, dang, this feels like an episode of The First 48, man.
That's what inspired me to write the book, because like I said, as you know, the younger guys, they used to love to come sit on my bed and in jail and talk to me, you know. So, you know, I used to, you know, educate them on the law and about the streets and how I illustrated in the streets, you know, and how I had all the cars and the jewelry. I done been there, done that. So that would inspire me to write the book, them. So like I said, the book is an amazing book. It's 560 pages, and it's explosive from the beginning to the end. I didn't leave nothing out. Everything what go on in prison, homosexual activity, how they getting the drugs, the telephones, you know. I changed some of the names, but, you know, I basically dug down deep and let you know how dudes incarcerated live, because some of these urban novels that I read, they kind of like water down the prison scenes. I didn't water it down. I gave it to you blood raw.
Okay, it sounds like you did. So is there anything particular like you feel like you could share with us about that's in the book, like an excerpt from the book about your experience?
What part? What do you want to know? What do you want to know? Like I said, you can ask me anything.
I want to know, first and foremost, when you first got there, were you afraid? Did you feel like, man, this is not it?
What, did I feel like I was a prey?
No, were you afraid when you first got there? Were you afraid? Were you scared
Never.
When you first got there? Never.
No, because, like I said, I have big brothers that been to prison all over the state of Florida. My father is a known figure in Miami, and everybody knows Big Duke's son. So when I arrived to prison, a lot of guys that grew up under my father and being around my father and my big brothers on my daddy's side, they knew who I was from me being little. And the ones was on the street before I got incarcerated knew me. So I wasn't never afraid. I was always, you have two caliber people in prison. You have prey and you have a predator. I was a predator in the street, so I was going to remain a predator in prison with or without a gun. See, you have some guys, they could be predators in the street with a weapon, but then get incarcerated and, you know, flip on the other side.
Mm-hmm. This is true. So you mentioned something about a lot of the younger ones coming to you for advice. Do you think that was in part because of your reputation, or it was just you kind of made yourself available, like, look, I'm big dog, if you want to come through and holler at me, come through and holler at me.
I was always a people person, you know, because the things that they going through and they trying to experience, I done been there. So I didn't have to look for them to talk to them. I just had that magnetic force where I always drew people to me. You know what I'm saying? And once I see that you was on positive stuff and productive stuff, you know, I sit down and I talk to you and get to you raw. But if you come at me sideways and I see you with the bull crap, I don't waste my time. Because a lot of these young juveniles today and younger guys, they feel like, oh, Unc can't tell me nothing, this, that. So I let them experience it by themselves and let them head crack. But the ones that want to change and better themselves at life, if they choose to sit down with me and let me share what I went through and my struggle and my life, I'm going to give it to them. But I don't go looking for it.
Okay, that's fair enough. So as far as life after, first of all, do you feel that, I think I already asked you, do you feel that it helped develop you in any way, the experience? Did it make you? Okay,
yeah.
Oh, that's good. That's good. In what way do you feel that
it saved my life? It actually saved my life because if I wouldn't have never got incarcerated, I either would have been dead or either in the federal penitentiary with a life sentence because of the things I was doing. So it would have went from burglary and being in to robbering and murdering, and it would have went to something else, selling drugs, because I never sold drugs, but I had the opportunity. I had the money to sell drugs. I had the money to buy big amounts of drugs. But that wasn't my desire to get in the game during that time. And I had people that was around me that sold drugs and got money with me on my level. So they used to try to get me to get out my game to get straight in the dope game, which it was sweet then in 86, 85, 84. But I never chose to. But I know if I would have stayed out, eventually I would have got into the dope game. So God set me down. He took me out of society and saved my life.
I can agree with that. I could see how that would be the case because of the path that you were on. The first thing I thought was 16 and you was already hitting heavy like that. You probably would have been dead by the time you was 19.
Yep.
Because once you get that reputation of people knowing, like, they automatically going to fear you. And sometimes most people, out of fear, first thing you're going to do is, I'm going to get him or her before they get me, right? So I could definitely see that being the case with that, as far as just the reaction of the action. So now, with that being said, is it safe to say that since your background, meaning from what your dad was and what you was around mostly, which was the drug dealing, right? So is it fair to say that your choice, your hobby of robbery was a thrill-seeking thing? Because that's kind of like a rush crime, like a whole rush of it. It's
yeah, it was a rush. It was a rush.
Okay. Yeah, it was about the rush. Because I know robbers. And I know that most of them that I've ever spoken with, it was all about the rush. Because a lot of them ended up, like you said, the money was there at a certain time. And usually with most crimes, you're doing it to get over, to get through, right? And once you get to a certain level, it's like, okay, then no. But if you find yourself still going the course, you never really got to that pinnacle because you were only a baby when you went in. So you was halted early on. God intervened early on. But that's usually the way it goes. But when you get to a point where you 10, 15 years and you still on the same course, That's all about the thrill of it at that point to me, you know. So I don't know, when just hearing you talk about the options and the route that would have been an easier route just based on the family history, it's kind of like, okay, this is what we do with this. This is what we do with that. Let's go this route. You can do this. You chose the stick-up kid route. That's more like a thrill-seeker crime, in my opinion. So you would agree that that's what that was? It was the rush of it all. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
If you don't
strike me
as a bully, you don't strike me as a bully.
I hate bullies. I hate bullies. I was a bully stopper.
Okay. See, that's what they used to call me, the bully buster. And it's a thin line because people might mistake you for the bully because you can neutralize the bully. But it's actually really the opposite. Like, you're not finna punk me, and you're not finna punk nothing around me. So let's be clear there. So that's interesting, like I said, because you don't strike me as a bully, and we've established that you're not a bully. So it was definitely the thrill-seeking of it all, the robbery thing. But I think it's two different things. A robber is a thrill-seeker, and a jacker is a bully. So a jacker is kind of that person.
It was like the people that I robbed, I didn't rob people that was needy and people. I robbed it drug dealers who had businesses, jewelry stores and this and that. So they was drug dealers. So I robbed it them. I didn't take from the real innocent. All of it was wrong, but I took from people who was doing wrong,
a Robin
too.
Hood, a modern-day Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Meaning you had a whole method to your madness. Now, we finna get into the thick of it. I'm going to ask you a heavy question real quick. So when you said that, you had a targeted prey, right?
Yes.
Do you think that a little bit of that stemmed from childhood? You said your dad was always a drug dealer. Do you think that play a part into why you chose that particular type of person? This is going to be who I'm going to get, just right here.
And I felt like it was more of an easy target than standing on the corner selling drugs, because I always been the type of individual, I didn't have patience. I liked it everything fast. So why sit out here 8-9 hours sweating on here running the cars and selling drugs, and I could go hit me a lick in an hour and make me $50,000, $60,000, $70,000?
I definitely understand the rationale. I do, and I respect it. I just got the book, so I haven't got into the thick of it, but I'm going to have to, like, really, really, like, dissect it so I can get into the layers of it. But I want you to I'm going to have you plug all of that again in a minute, but I do want to talk about life after for Mr. Lawson. You did say that there's somebody you've been with for 19 years, correct?
No, I've been with her 30 years.
Okay. So you guys, your relationship started when you was locked up, or – How did that come about?
Yes, I met her on a visiting park in 1990 when she came to visit her brother. And my mom and my father came to see me. And she's 11 years older than me. I was 19. I think she was like 32. And I've been with her ever since. She's been riding with me.
Okay.
She's in the book, but
I
changed
up.
Huh?
And keep it like that. Keep it like that. Keep it like that. You said you was 19 and she was 32?
Yes.
Okay. No, that's a good thing to know. The reason why I say that is because a lot of people, it's usually the opposite. The man is older and the woman is younger, but sometimes the older woman can be structured. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing. It obviously worked you. It balanced you out. And look at that. See, that's what I'm saying. Blessings and knowledge can come from anywhere. Like a youngster told you, oh, gee, turn that into a book. And then you found your soulmate on the yard in that very place that you did not want to be. You know, so that's why I said you got to always be prepared. So that's what's up. So were you and her brother friends on the inside, or you guys just kind of saw each other in passing on the visit?
Really, me and her uncle, I met her uncle in confinement. And I was in confinement in a cell by myself for 26 months for assault on an officer, a correction officer. So I met him back there. It's called close management. It's not regular confinement. When you catch major charges, they put you in a place called CM. So I was back there, and I met her uncle. So when I was released, While I was back there, her brother came to that prison. So I went and found him and was telling him, delivering messages from his uncle. And so when I went on the visiting part that weekend, he was out there and I met his sister. But then he became my biggest enemy because he envied me of being with his sister and what she went to doing for me. So he felt like I was taking from him, which that wasn't the case. He just was jealous. To this day, he's still jealous of me. He'll talk to me, but he still has that envy in his heart.
Wow. See, that's good to know as well, because there's a flip side to it. Because now, if we've been realistic, I can see how that would be a problem. You know, because in prison, neither one of y'all know if y'all when y'all going to get out, right? And that's survival, correct? Mm-hmm. Like, somebody that's taking care of me while I'm in here, if now they occupying their time, their business, their packages, the money on the books to somebody else, that's
mm-hmm.
messing up how I move. So I can see how that would cause a problem, you know.
We end up fighting. We fought one time in prison, me and a brother older than me too. He was like 30 and I was 19.
So you guys still, is it still kind of sticky or are you guys okay? Because technically y'all family now, right?
Yeah, we're okay, but I know in the back of my mind, I know he don't really like me. He still envy me and she know it too.
Wow. So do you guys have any children?
I have a daughter. My daughter is 34 years old. I have one kid.
Okay. Okay. So that's
but
good
not
to
with
know.
Her.
Okay, that's good though that you guys are still together. That shows loyalty and patience. I tell you that because you know she rocked with you through most of your sentence basically because you was only 19 when you met her and you did 30 years so and you went in at 16. So that's a good thing. So let's talk a little bit. That brings us to right here. Let's talk about the life after. So what are you doing right now? Where are you at right now? Do you mentor? Are you just trying to stay afloat? Like, where is Mr. Lawton at right now in this chapter of his life, 49 years old? Where are you at?
I'm going to be straight up with you. When I first was released, I was out 4 months, and I got back locked up. I got out moving too fast trying to make up for those 30 years, and that was my biggest mistake. Study living my life at that particular time on a daily basis, I was used to beautiful things, beautiful cars, beautiful clothes, so I started chasing real fast, and I end up selling drugs, getting in the drug game after 4 months out, and one of my homeboys from prison called me, and as a favor, I did something for him. And I met his so-called cousin, and when I went up there to Broward County and Sunrise to meet his cousin, come to find out his cousin was an informant. So when I took the 4 ounces of heroin up there and they gave me the $10,000, the jump-out team jumped out on me. So I went back in. I was locked up in the jail for a year. And the judge put me on house arrest, which I have a band on my leg. And I've been fighting that case for 4 years right now.
So they still managed to get you back in the system, but on the flip side. So do you think, because you got away, you got out, you didn't get away with, you did your time. You got out without parole. I was going to say you got away without getting parole when you got out from the first time, from the 32 years. But this time, do you think that the friend that asked you, do you think it was a setup from the beginning?
That's what everybody's saying, you know, because my
like
other friend.
It sounds like it. I don't want to give nobody a jacket.
Yeah, my other friends in prison, all them, like, you know, was calling me, what you want us to do to him, this and that. I'm like, nah, don't do nothing to him. Man, I'm telling you, he did that, his cousin did that, to try to help him get his time cut, because he's been locked up 35 years.
And
so
I
they was
that.
Like, man, Panama probably did that to try to get his time cut, this and that and that and that. So, you know, I told him don't do nothing to him. So, you know, I just leave it in God's hand. I feel
yeah,
like I'm going to be all right
him.
Because if I wasn't, I wouldn't have been back out here right now.
Yeah, with an ankle monitor, that's still a blessing because they could have kept you with no – it just kept you because of what you just did all the time for you to back on jail property. You up there about to do something. You know what I'm saying? That's a bad look. But then again, it also falls a little bit if it's what it sounds like, the way I'm thinking what happened, right? Like on some setup, it sounds almost like entrapment as well. So
that's what my lawyer fighting it on, entrapment right now.
Yeah. That's
because I never called them. It's a different. Yeah, so my lawyer's saying you never had the attention to selling no drugs. They called you.
Right.
And they kept calling me because I declined. I'm like, Panama, I just got out, man. Man, help me get a lawyer. Help me get a... So they were persistent. They kept calling me. And kept calling me. So in the entrapment statute, you got to prove two elements where you was allured and enticed. And they kept calling me, knowing that y'all calling me to set me up.
Yeah, it sounds like you got, I'm telling you, it sounds like you got another book on the way. Because, boy, I just wish nothing but the best, my brothers. I'm telling you, that deck is stacked against you, honey. It's a fight, but I just feel like all tests end up being testimonies in the end. So it's what you make of it. And, you know, I know that's kind of got your life in limbo right now because we're supposed to be at the point where we're talking about life after, but it's like the life after is type of way.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate, but we're going to stay optimistic and God worked it out before and hopefully – he's going to come through with flying colors again. Like I said,
ma'am.
It's just unfortunate that it comes to that. Like, and you said the other individual, he's been in there for 35 years. Is he still locked up right now?
Yes, he had a natural life.
Okay, well, see, yeah, that would be something that would make me say, aha, I could see why this person would try to, not justifying it, but it would make sense for it to be a setup. Because some people might say, but why would he want to set him up? Well, if you got natural life and they told you can get out tomorrow, and it could be an envy thing too. Like, well, he got out, he had life, not even considering you got juvenile life. That's something different. That's when you fell under the juvenile law. It could be something along those lines. But I wish everybody involved the best. So as of right now, is it safe to say that has kind of got your life in limbo because you can't really move like you want to move with an ankle monitor on?
Yes, because my whole life right now, I only can move around Monday through Friday. But, you know, God been good to me. My house arrest officers, they be leaning on me. They give me like 6-7 hours to move around. You know, I can look for a job. I could do things. I could go where I want to go. So I'm living a life, but I still have something hindering me, which is this band on my leg. It's stopping me from doing what I really want to do because, like I said, before I got out of jail, I used to mentor to the kids for the correction officers 3 times out a week. And, you know, all these kids, you know, they looked it up to me. You know what I'm saying? Coming from University of Miami College, the at-risk kids, the 500 role models, they used to love to come see me. And I changed a lot of these kids' life with what I went through, sharing my life experience with them. So that's something that I really want to do, mentor to the kids. And I didn't have opportunities where people contact me from out of town, but I can't leave Miami. They want me to come mentor and, you know, be a speaker, but I can't leave Miami. So it's stopping me from doing a lot of things that I want to do.
And that's what's going to really touch the masses is being able to do that. What part of Miami are you in?
Dade County.
Dade County, okay. So Man, I wish you could get, well, things like this right here are help. And maybe start, like, platforms on the internet to where you can mentor. Like, you kind of got to utilize the tools that you got. And like I said, I'm very grateful that I was able to be an outlet with this. And then we're going to have you tell people how they can find you, people that might need a mentoring assistance, our kids that need those things from you, that big brethren, and about staying the course. How can they contact you as far as your social media sites and things of that nature?
Yes, my Facebook name is Pookie Lawton, and I talk to a lot of parents over social media. You know, they inquire with me about problems that they go through on the daily. They inbox me, I call them, I FaceTime, I talk to their kids. You can reach me at Pookie Lawton on Facebook or either Pookie Lawton on IG. My Gmail is pookieboy1970@gmail.com. So you can reach me all three of those type of ways.
Okay. Well, you guys, make sure you guys reach out to him for your mentorship. Or it might be for you, your sons, your daughters, even your loved ones. Make sure you contact Pookie Lawton, and that is spelled L-A-W-T-O-N, not Lawson. It's Lawton, all right? So make sure you guys reach out to him, and make sure you guys get over to Amazon and get that book. Go ahead and tell him the name of the book.
Yes, 30 Years Behind Prison Walls.
All right, and it is by?
By Torrance Pookie Boy Lawton.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank you so much for giving us your time today and talking to us. And please don't be a stranger. When you got something new that comes up, I want you to tap in with us and let the viewers know, listeners know what's going on with you. Let us know how things turn out with this upcoming situation. I don't want you to get too much into that because this is an international broadcast, and I would never want to be a part of anything that would harm your outcome in any type of way. So I wish you nothing but the best and many blessings to come. And just tap in with us, you know, let us know how you're doing, OG. And like I said, you are greatly appreciated. And, man, the storm is going to lift. I promise you that. I just feel that you have a good energy and a good spirit. And, you know, it's your time. You're deserving of it. And just keep living great. I know sometimes it may be getting hard, man, but it's working itself out of that. So is there anything else you want to tell people?
Yes, I appreciate thanking you first. I appreciate from you from giving me this opportunity to get on your, you know, broadcast and, you know, get my message out, you know, to talk a little about my book and, you know, try to, you know, identify with the listeners. That's a blessing. You know, like I say, since I've been out, I done tried reaching, you know, out to several people, you know, Steve Harvey show, this one, that. But it's been so hard connecting, trying to contact them, you know, because, like I said, I have a story to share. You know, you ain't even heard half of it, but I know, you know, on the show it's kind of like a time thing, but I've been through a lot. You know what I'm saying? And I appreciate this opportunity.
We'll get you back on here for sure. We're going to get you back on here and we'll talk about, we'll stretch it out and get it done. Like I said, I wish you nothing but the best, and feel free to tap in at any time. We'll do it all over again and talk about more. We'll set up, matter of fact, guys, I'm going to go out on a limb right here. What we're going to do is we're going to set up, we're going to say we're going to do a part two. We'll do a part two to this. Mm-hmm. We'll do a part two with Mr. Lawton, and we'll follow up on what's going on with him. All right. So until next time,
I
you all thank
that.
You once again so much for coming on the show. And I'm gonna email you. We'll set up a day for a second time, and I'm gonna email you today, and we'll set that up as soon as possible. Because now that I put it out there, the people gonna expect it, and this is something that people need to hear. I know a lot of people that will benefit from this interview. And once again, I thank you, and I thank you all for listening. And until next time, my brother, you want to mention anybody real quick?
No, I'm good. Like I say, it's a blessing, you know, having this opportunity for God, you know, bringing you to me to give me this, chance to, you know, put myself out there, and I appreciate that. That's a blessing.
All right. Well, you guys, make sure you be following, watching his social media, and then make sure you watch mine. Go to the website, the First Lady POV. I have we'll set up another interview, and I'll let you guys know when it's coming, because I know a lot of people are going to really be looking for that. All right? So until next time,
yes. One more thing. One more thing. One more thing before you go. You also can look me up. I'm on YouTube. It's called Behind Bars in Miami. I'm the face of that documentary on there. It's like 8 million follower viewers already. It's called Behind Bars Miami. You could go on YouTube and I'll pop up.
Okay. So you guys, make sure you guys go check that out as well. And as always, I want to say this to you all in parting. All right. Reach back for those that are coming up behind you and pay homage to those who did it before you. It won't cost a thing. I promise you'll feel good about yourself. And until next time, you all, peace, one love, and God bless your hustle. And we are out of here. Until
God
next
bless
time.
Y'all.
All righty. Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
All right. No problem. All right.
All righty.
Okay.
You tuned in.
First Lady Point of View. First Lady Point of View.
You tuned in.
First Lady Point of View. First Lady Point of View.
Culture, music, news, reviews. You tuned in.
First Lady Point of View.
You tuned in.
First Lady Point of View. It's the First Lady Point of View.
17, yeah, we always on time. First Lady Felicia K on the line. Wanna know what's poppin'? Tap in for the scoop. On all the hot topics. The latest fashion, new music reviews. The hottest artists and exclusive interviews. You came to the right spot. First Lady on deck. Keep it locked.
Keep it locked. You tuned in.
First Lady Point of View. First Lady Point of View.
You tuned in.
First Lady Point of View. First Lady Point of View.
Culture, music, news, reviews. You tuned in.
First Lady Point of View.
You tuned in.
First Lady Point of View.
It's the First Lady Point of View.